Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
This is a story that took social media by a storm. Or did it? Or did it? Maybe because I was interested, that's what I kept seeing. Professor Anton Harber, Executive Director of the Campaign for Free Expression, good morning. How are you?
I'm well this morning, thank you.
So, yeah, did you watch the first season of Depp and Heard?
I watched bits of it, you know, and nobody could watch it all.
No, you couldn't. Well, nobody would admit it anyway.
Yes, it was riveting stuff.
So that's the interesting thing, is because I imagine, because I was interested in it, I saw so much of it. And there was almost the sense that this was taking over the world. And then I would speak to somebody and they'd say, I'm not sure what you're talking about. And I think, well, how is that even possible? How would that be possible that you're living in the same world that I'm living in and so same social media, but clearly you're not?
Yes.
So why do we how do we create our own echo chambers?
Well, this is a very interesting product of social media. You know, when we all read newspapers or watched the same 6 or 8 o'clock news on television, those were social gathering points where the majority or many members of a society, of people who lived in the same city, would consume the same news, follow a similar news agenda. In a sense, we were brought together by the fact that we all watched the news at 8, or we all read The Star if we lived in Johannesburg. Not all, but enough to create a kind of news community. And that was where we met.
Mm.
The point about social media is that it just doesn't work like that. And there's 2 points about it that I think are crucial. One is that if you home in on a subject, a topic, or a group of people with a specialist interest, you can delve incredibly deeply and endlessly into that and ignore everything else. But the other thing is that the algorithm, it's driven by an algorithm which is designed overwhelmingly to keep you there, to keep you engaged. So that algorithm feeds you more and more of the same and more of the same kind of opinion from the same kind of people you seem to be liking and interested in. So it reinforces that bubble rather than giving you a range, a diversity of news and information.
So I've often observed this actually in a boardroom, where you can have a powerful person in the room, maybe the CEO, maybe not, it doesn't matter, a powerful person in the room with perhaps a bit of a power differential saying something outrageous, the sky is purple. And what everybody does is try and find reasons why he is absolutely right, that the sky is indeed purple. And we all reaffirm that. And yes, and it's such a smart observation, and the sky is purple. And until that boardroom is so convinced that the sky is purple, that when you walk out of the boardroom and someone says the sky is actually blue, you look at them and like they're completely out of their minds. Obviously, the sky is purple because we've had that reinforced so often. And I almost see that as a microcosm of what goes on within our social media. Would you agree with that?
I think that's an interesting illustration of what lies behind the phenomenon. But the point is that in a boardroom, you might have someone who says, but hold on, the sky isn't blue or purple or whatever.
Right.
Or you come out of the boardroom and you go home for dinner and you discuss it and somebody says, don't be ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. That's what spouses are for, partners are for. Exactly.
The point is that bubble is temporary and it's easily penetrated. The problem with the social media bubble is that it's built to reinforce itself. And, you know, it's been very interesting to see, I don't know if you've seen the shooter in the U.S. that attacked the school last week.
Right.
How they've been able to trace his recent internet exploration. Delved deeper and deeper into far right-wing conspiracy, anti-Semitic, racist material. And it just seems to have taken him deeper and deeper and deeper and shaped his thinking in a way that's quite frightening and horrifying.
Is there a way to combat this? You know, because unless we willingly choose, and I know we all like that, is we hate reading views that contradict our own. It's just so uncomfortable, which means we really have to force ourselves to do it. How do we combat that, you know, unless we put in that kind of an effort?
Well, I think this is something we're all grappling with. You know, what happened was that the news we got delivered in traditional media was curated, it was edited, it was selected, it was processed. The news we get on social media is unprocessed and, in fact, designed to suck you in. I mean, that's the critical difference, that they just, you know, Facebook designs the algorithm to specifically to suck you in, because that's how they keep you and make money from you. So we have to face up to these difficulties and realities, and we struggle to work out how to do it without simple suppression of different and dissenting views, without harming too much freedom of expression. So when Elon Musk says, I want Twitter to be less, more open, less censored, in fact, the reason that was quite alarming, because Twitter has grappled with the fact and realized that they have no choice in the end. If they want to reduce the harm that they can potentially do, to filter the stuff in some way or another.
So
the platforms do have to face up to the need to filter and stop dangerous, harmful material. I'm not saying stop opinions that we don't like, but dangerous material. I think we also need to look at education. We need to make sure our children are, and all of us, are equipped to filter, to select, to be aware of, and break through the bubble.
And that is something that we really have to do from a very young age, is teach our kids a very different way of thinking, to, as you say, to break through the bubble, to not be afraid, to in fact, not to be afraid, quite the opposite, to openly seek alternative views. And unless we change that from a cultural perspective, I don't know that we can win this war through regulations. And of course, the Twitters and the Facebooks and all of the social media have to have some form of monitoring. But the problem with that is that the minute I don't like an opinion, well, then I'm going to be offended by it, and then I'm going to claim that site is completely unreasonable and they only pandering to the opposite opinions that I have, because I'm not offended by the opinions that agree with me, even though somebody else might be. So it's a very, very difficult space for any of these platforms.
It is complex. There's no question. The platforms originally resisted filtering this material, saying that they were just platforms. They weren't media per such. They didn't edit. They just presented whatever. But they realized over time that was impossible, because they just became platforms for some of the most vile, dangerous material. So they had to, been forced to, by social pressure and political pressure, to adapt and start filtering. And that's why when Elon Musk says filter less, it really was quite startling, because it was as if he was unaware of the 15, 20-year struggle Twitter has gone through to work out how best to handle the situation.
A very, very complex one indeed. Professor Anton Harbour, thank you for joining us, as you always do, Executive Director of the Campaign for Free Expression.